You're listening to the Olivia Maxwell Radio Salon on Washington Vietnam Radio, Big 100.3, HT2 VNDC. Welcome. We have a very, very special, iconic, legendary guest with a very, very magnanimous, incredible soul, a very special person, unique, one of a kind, what can I say, the queen of cool, and just an overall warrior cost lady, the Irish-born fashion designer, Daryl Kay.
I dig you. You dig me. I dig you. You dig me. We dig each other. That's groovy. Oh yeah.
Daryl Kay, the Dublin-born designer, her decision to close the East Village store at the end of March after withdrawing from New York Fashion Week in February may have led some to believe that things were changing for the worse, but the designer, no, just for the better. And she's absolutely still making clothing, and a preview of her latest Daryl Kay collections says otherwise, an article of Style.com. Daryl Kay is the one that started the East Village, put East Village fashion chic downtown on the map. She's very famous for her hip hugger, bootleg, jeans. She has dressed Kim Gordon, Liv Tyler, Kate Moss. Joey Ramone actually came into a show just to hear his music. She has some incredible staged fashion shows spanning from lights from flatbed trucks to, you know, empty banks and stuff like that. And she's also had an incredible success in her 21 Bond Street store, which was a hub of many, which was just a home for many to go to. And then her famous, very versatile leather leggings, a staple in her wardrobe. Just used for everything and anything. And she moved to New York in 1991. She did a very small job on 6th Street and then opened a small shop on 6th Street and with $40,000 saved. And worked in a secondhand store, married Paul Leonard, also from Dublin. And then eventually went to the Bond Street store and worked in films. She co-designed costumes and wardrobe for the independent features such as Jim Jarmusch's Mystery Train and other films. In 1996, received a Perry Ellis Award for Emerging Talent from the Council of Fashion Designers of America and has been a consultant for Tommy Hilfiger. Kerrigan later launched a second line called K-189. And very interesting, in 1997, she started doing shows in William Wegman's former studio, which was very cutting edge, very good space, and she's known for her incredible music that she puts together for her show. She does it all herself. She does remixes of Doors songs and does it all herself, and most fashion houses don't. And her vision was evident in the shows, legendary in fashion lore, an empty swimming pool in the Les in the space now known as Capital, when it was a working bank, in the roof of Gordon Bunshaft's Lever House, on the top of a flatbed truck. She's also very involved in human rights, and I don't want to say political, I just want to say human rights, and the close of the Halliburton loophole, and very involved in the Occupy movement, and anti-fracking, and very interesting. She also invented this, her own thing, the jump dress, which was first presented on the runway for Daryl K's Spring-Summer 2012, 20th anniversary collection. It's been 20 years. Yes, it has. Presented at the Gavin Brown's Enterprise. Is a cross between a dress and a jumpsuit made in stretched jersey and also woven fabrics. And we got to give it to her. We're going to hear a lot about the marching over the bridge, and I'm going to discuss the show that I was at where it was fall into camouflage. And I just want to read you this poem that she so brilliantly tapped into, which I think kind of captures the show, by Mary Oliver. I'm going to begin. Sleeping in the forest, I thought the earth remembered me. She took me back so tenderly, arranging her dark skirts, her pockets full of lichens and seeds. I slept as never before, a stone on a riverbed, nothing between me and the white fire of the stars but my thoughts. And they floated light as moths and the branches of perfect trees. All night I heard the small kingdoms breathing around me, the insects, the birds that do their work, and they do all their work in the darkness. All night I rose and fell as if in water, grappling with a luminous dune. And by morning I had vanished at least a dozen times into something better. They call her the Queen of Cool. Her name is Daryl Kerrigan. She was also inspired by her mother, who also made clothing and also made her own styles. And a quote from Andrew Richardson here. Daryl is the only woman I have ever really danced with. She is a real woman, a woman who knows herself, a kind woman. And I don't mean weak. Kind, the way so many people are. I mean the kindness that comes from enormous strength. And believe me, guys, I know Daryl. And this is so true. So thank you, Andrew, for wholeheartedly from the Olivia Maxwell Salon. From an inner power so strong, every act, no matter what, is more proof of that power. To you, Daryl, she has herself, and who is better, more beautiful, more powerful, more perfect, more strong, more feminine, more extraordinary, more virile, domineering, more irresistible. Who else than Daryl K? And here she is. You are listening to the Olivia Maxwell Radio Salon. Ciao, Vietnam. And hello, America. And hello, world.
I dig you. You dig me. I dig you. You dig me. We dig each other. That's groovy. Oh yeah.
Ciao, Vietnam. You are listening to another extra special edition of the Olivia Maxwell Radio Salon on VNDC Radio, Vietnam, Washington. We are on with the legendary fashion icon, Dublin-born, New York-based, Daryl Kay. Ciao, Daryl, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Olivia. Nice to be here.
Yes, there's a lot of ground that I really want to cover with this, but I just want to say you're so amazing, and everything that you've done has been completely legendary and, like, ahead of its time, with from the hip hugger bell bottom, you know, bootleg jean to, you know, your streamlined, some simplicity of everything you do, and the Bond Street store, and everybody, it's just sort of like become this hub. And you know, now it's not there anymore, but I just, you know, I mean, that show I was at was just amazing. I think it was 2011, and the music that you had and the camouflage and everything, what can I say? I mean, it just completely blew me away.
Yeah, it was great that you got to come. Was that the first show you came to?
Yeah, it was, actually. Our dear friend, Chris McGuire. Yeah, and you had invited me, and I remember that I met up with him, and we were right in the front row, and we just, I mean, saw everything. And I remembered you opened up with Riders on the Storm from the Doors. I loved that.
Yeah, it was a remix of Riders on the Storm. Well, I just love that opening. I've always loved that opening. I mean, who couldn't love the opening of, like, Riders on the Storm with the most perfect, like, little kind of piano in with the raindrops, and then that echo, and, you know, that, I guess that the Ray Manzarek kind of legendary keyboard sound was born into me at a young age. My brother was a big Doors fan. Like, my family was kind of split into two. You know, there was the Doors camp, and then there was, let's see, and then maybe there was the kind of Bowie camp. So, but I always liked both.
Exactly. Well, you know, I mean, that whole show is just, like, very ethereal. And, I mean, I've been to other fashion shows, and I don't know. There's a rock and roll thing that you have going on more than any other designer out there. And
yeah.
Me with obsessed with music. And you have a certain 60s thing, too, like, and that's another thing that, you know, and it's in your clothing, too. I mean, those leather pants.
It's absolutely in my clothing.
It's so Jim Morrison.
I would say I'm more inspired by music than any other force. Like, you know, although, I mean, of course, everything else goes with it, and my daughter's just running into the room now, so she's going to start yelling, Mom, Mom, Mom.
Oh, that's so fun. She can say hi.
Hi. Wow, yum. So, so I guess the rock and roll, the music thing, and it's, you know, rock and roll kind of just is music, isn't it? Like, no matter what kind of music it is, it's kind of going to be rock and roll. If you're a rock and roll person, really, I think, isn't it? You know,
uh-huh.
If that's the way you like to live your life, kind of. Because, I mean, I'm just not only into rock and roll music. I'm into everything. Like, I love Chopin, you know.
Ah, so do I.
Adore, you know, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Chopin or Satie or a lot of, you know. So music is definitely a huge, huge inspiration. But music to me is always like, I can, I usually know exactly what music I'll be playing, like at the time that I'll conceive of the whole, like, feeling of the show. I'll kind of know what the music will be as well. If I don't, it's not as kind of like directed a show as maybe it has been at times when I have known the music. Like, there was one show I did where it was in the what now is the Gagosian Gallery, you know, on 26th Street in Chelsea, and it was a big parking garage thing because, mm-hmm. You know, New York was a different place, and I did shows like in the wildest places.
That's
that are
so
now, you know,
amazing, Daryl. That's rock
so
and roll.
I mean, opened, what?
That is rock and roll, you know, I mean, that's it.
Yeah. And it's New York and everything, uh-huh. You know, it's just being so inspired by, like, you know, wow, this like amazing city, and look, like I can pick this incredible, like, I mean, what happened in the parking garage that's now Gagosian was an incredible show, but actually that was really not anything like some of the spaces I have done shows in, you know, like one time we did a show in a bank on the Lower East Side, that bank on the Barry called, I can't remember what it's called, something beginning with V, a big fancy nightclub now. I never go there, but I mean, we did a show in there when it was a bank, and it was a Chinese, the Barry Savings Bank or something, and like it closed at 3 o'clock, and they, like, you know, the tellers left, and then we came in and did a show in this huge bank at like 7 o'clock. Wild. But the show in the Gagosian, though, I think, talking about the rock and roll thing, was, you know, the whole show just opened with Ramones music, just back to back, you know.
Yeah, like, I heard that. Joey, it's pinned, you know, that Joey Ramone came to
one
of your
shows. And Joey Ramone sat in the front row, and he was so happy, just like, you know, with this. It was amazing. And so that was, I mean, that was definitely rock and roll. And the show, we drove in like a, what do you call it, I can't remember my truck in terms of, what is it, a 28-wheeler or something,
flat,
you know, a Big Mac, and we kind of, like,
pull
the cab and face the cab onto the audience, you know, with the big, huge, the headlights of the truck with the spotlights on the girls.
Oh, that's so chic.
Walking up and down the, you know, the flatbed, and it was cool.
Very, very cool. I mean, no, I don't know anybody who's done that, but this is... It's, you know, I'm going to compare you to a graffiti artist right now. It's very Banksy.
Oh, man. You know what? I only had a couple of photos of, like, Joey and the backstage. Is that all this stuff is just memories. There isn't even any film footage or anything of it at all. Like, the only photo album I had of, like, Joey hanging out and at the show and stuff somehow got, I think, trashed when we moved from one place to the other.
Right. To your 21 Bond Street store, legendary, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of became
21
a hub.
Bond Street.
Yeah.
Bond Street, yeah. I love Bond Street.
What a beautiful street, you know, in the
East
Village.
What a beautiful street, yeah. And it was always the most beautiful street. Like, I had my eye on that street, like, in the early 90s when I, you know, well, actually I opened the shop first there in 96, but... Because it was obviously the most, I mean, the proximity to the East Village and, you know, the nicest street with that kind of proximity to the East Village. But there was nobody on it when I moved there. We actually took over the space from William Wegman, you know, that artist who photographs his dogs, the Weimaraners. Well,
subways, running with people, up in Harlem, down on Broadway, you're no tramp, but you're no lady, talking that street talk, you're the heart and soul of New York City, and love is just a passing word, it's the thought. You're a maid in New York.
Yeah.
Paul, my partner, used to build houses and work with William Wagman, with another great friend of his, and so we were kind of friendly with him. And,
oh,
and he gave us a space, yeah.
Yeah. And you also outfitted Kim Gordon, you know, Sonic Youth, so she took an immediate liking to you, I guess, you know, instant.
She did.
She channeled the rock and roll in you.
She was rock and roll, but I mean, I've never, Kim and I never actually connected in any other way outside of her buying my clothes, really. There was no rock and roll connection or no... not really anything else aside from her. She came and used to come in a lot, like every week, probably every week, and even sometimes more than once a week, and buy like my clothes. And of course, it was great for me. But I didn't really know who anybody was back then. I was just a kid, you know, who just opened the shop.
Yeah, 21 years old. You moved from Dublin to New York.
I didn't really know Kim Gordon, who she really was back then. She used to come in with Daisy Von Firth, and then they started X-Girl a couple of years later.
Wow, right. I remember that. That was really great. But, you know, what's fascinating is I've had, you know, other Dubliners and many of the Celtics, you know, Scottish, on my show for some reason. It's an affinity I have. And, I mean, what was it like? Because you grew up in Dublin in a very kind of groovy time, and I think, I mean, that must have had a huge impact musically, because the music coming out of there, you know, the Undertones and U2 and the Pogues and all of that other stuff, I mean, that must have just, you must have just absorbed that. And I mean, I know you went to the college over there, National.
That's so funny that you would see it that way, because like for me it was like a cultural desert, Dublin was. There was, you know, everything that I was inspired by or that I got energy from came from either New York or London.
Wow.
And yeah, and I loved, you know, Fergal Sharkey. In fact, I just watched Teenage Kicks on YouTube the other day, and he's just, it was the coolest thing ever. Oh. Yeah, but that was a rare thing. I mean, I remember who was it, the Virgin Prunes and stuff were this kind of really amazing underground punk band back then. And I used to go to a lot of great gigs, like John Cooper Clarke and stuff. Do you know John Cooper Clarke?
You know, I don't. But
well, now I do. He calls himself the punk poet, and he was brilliant, so brilliant. So we used to get like a lot of underground people. But you know, U2 and that scene wasn't my scene at all. I was very close with the boys, like Liam and Wainley and stuff from the Hot House Flowers. We used to go out together and stuff.
They're another great Dublin band. I remember I was a kid and my dad took me over there. And I think, you know, I was always visiting Ireland as a kid with my dad. And he did a film called Sea Marks when I was 5. Which was written by Gardner McKay, who's now passed. It's great, great.
What was
teleplay.
The name of the song?
The name of the teleplay of the film for PBS was Sea Marks, which came out in about 1975, 76, and it was Gardner McKay wrote it. And my father and Jack Venza, and I remember this other Irish producer, Tom Hayes, who's very legendary. He did a lot of the big Irish films over there. And I was over there as a 5-year-old on Acro Island, actually. And
wow.
Yes.
Beautiful.
And that was before, you know, and it was incredible. And then they had, like, the wedding scene. And there's this very famous poster of this old man next to the actor, George Hearn, who was the lead, who played with Veronica Castang, who's now passed. And it's under a Guinness sign. And it's just the old Ireland, you know.
I know. And, you know, as soon as anybody even starts talking about Ireland, like, I just want to be there. Like, I would just be there at the drop of a hat at any chance, you know, to be in Ireland. But to be in the country in Ireland, too. Of course, I have dear, dear friends who I just love to see and hang out with in Dublin. But it's such a small country that they all go all over the country all the time on little trips everywhere. And
Tipperary. I love Tipperary.
They've such a, and even just talking about Ireland just reminds me how the Irish people themselves, like, really are an inspired culture, actually, and I think that was the inspiration to create, you know, because in fact we had very little growing up, you know. Everything was a dream, really. You had to imagine everything that you wanted. You had to create it yourself. And it was all a fantasy, you know, maybe of what you could get in New York. Like,
your own change.
you know, New York, when you're, I was growing up as a young teenager, just was like, almost like this kind of Wizard of Oz kind of place.
Wild.
Know, like as if the streets were just kind of like sparkling.
And the yellow brick road, just follow the yellow brick road.
You know?
Love that.
But then the freedom that you experienced when you actually came here as well was just phenomenal, you know, to actually land in New York from growing up in Dublin, like at age 18, and drive over the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, and just look at the huge cars, and it's just like, wow, look at the cars, like the first thing that hits you. And
wow.
Because Ireland's a great place, but it's a complicated place too, you know, because, and people are rebellious in Ireland because there's a lot to rebel against, and I think that's also what kind of makes them creative.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if we were all sort of content, there's no reason to. The pathos just wouldn't be necessary, and you definitely need pathos or contention to speak or to want to write or to want to protest or to want to do anything, you know, to inspire.
Yeah,
you. Speaking of the Brooklyn
Bridge.
It's
cool to be somebody who speaks out. Like, Irish people are very opinionated.
You of know? Course. I think that's why I love them so much. I mean,
they're not afraid to be to speak their mind, you know, because because that's kind of the culture of what you grew. You know, you had to be somebody who's, and if you were going to survive, you had to really, like, carve out your niche and speak your mind. Whereas,
and know your ground maybe, and stand it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Brooklyn Bridge, I'm quite impressed with you because not a lot of designers do this because they're afraid of a corporate backing or whatnot or whatnot. And this is a prime example of you practicing what you preach. November 17th, 2011, there was a blog. I believe I read it on your website, www.darylk.com, marching over the Brooklyn Bridge. With the 99% this evening was a great and visceral experience. Comparable to a great night or day dancing at Body and Soul. And the energy of the people was positively palpable. Traffic from both directions was honking in support of the protest. Although there were 500 people marching, you know, everyone's showing solidarity and, you know, the projections on the side of the Verizon building, you know, all this stuff. We are winning. Do not be afraid. Love, along with slogans. And, wow, and that was, you know, part of the Occupy movement.
That was an incredible, incredible experience in New York City. And, like, you know, I am somebody who's lived here a long time. I go to a lot of events and, you know, and things that happen in the city. And that was, I mean, talk about underrated. It just wasn't even rated at all. It's like tweeted a few things in. I mean, to have those massive projections, like full length on that Verizon building that has no windows. So all the cars coming across could read these things like, you know, we are winning, do not be afraid. What it meant to the people. I mean, those feelings that you do get when you're at, like, an incredible concert where your heart is just completely open, you know, and you're just full of, like, love and enthusiasm. And all the kids marching over the bridge were feeling that. And it was a great show of youthful, positive energy. And actually, I just marched across it on my own because I don't really have any friends in the fashion business or even kind of any friends.
You know, if I was in New York,
who are as into that as I am. Like, you know, I was just really into it, and I just love it.
Well, you know, if I was in New York, Daryl, I would have been right there with you because, you know, I like to do that too. I, you know, that's the voice.
But it really meant a lot to me. You know, it meant a lot to me. And but I am misread a lot. People don't really understand me because I don't fit into the rest of what fashion people are, you know. You know, the business of fashion and how people, like, you know, I mean, every industry has its games that are played. So, you know, being maybe, I mean, there have been great, more activist type designers like, say, Catherine Hamlet and, you know, people who speak out. Remember, she used to have those big T-shirts. It was like 99% say, oh God, something, I can't remember, or 1%, and it was like Save the Whales and this kind of thing, say no to, you know, British political things that were happening back then. Mm-hmm. And but what I was going to, actually, I had a sale in my, I mean, I shouldn't even talk about this, so we'll decide if we want to edit this.
No.
This and is, even if we don't edit what I'm saying,
it's this is the good thing about my show is that stuff like this doesn't get edited out.
So, well, maybe this is kind of personal, this issue, but it was an issue that affected me, emotionally because, I had a sale in my store, and it was basically, I had gone down also to Wall Street and done a photo shoot down there with this, I'm always making these t-shirts, I spray paint t-shirts and stuff and just make slogans and put t-shirts in the store, I used to do this, and one of the ones I've done for years is just Get Up, Stand Up.
I was going to say, yeah.
I love Get Up, I just love Get Up,
Bob Marley, baby, Bob Marley.
I mean, for God's sake, everything, Get Up, Stand Up, yeah, Bob Marley, everything. Mm. So people really relate to this. Like, I would put it in, I'd put these t-shirts in, a handmade, and put them in the store, and they'd be gone before the end of the day. You know, because people just instantly, and they're punk, you know, just these spray-painted ones. And so I was down in Wall Street, and I did this Get Up, Stand Up thing, and, you know, took photos, and I actually brought a model down there, like this very, very cool model who kind of is like Damien Hirst's muse.
She's gorgeous. I saw those pictures. Gorgeous.
And she's
blonde.
A very cool girl, too, uh-huh. You know. And so we did this shoot. And then I, you know, I mean, I'm an independent artist, and like somebody like Spencer Sweeney will have a kind of a pay the rent party, you know, like an emergency party to pay the rent in his studio down. So, you know, and it's like, so I have what I do is like I'll have, okay, an event in my shop and I'll have a sale, and I'd taken all these pictures and it was like, all right, well, somehow it just coincided with an Occupy Wall Street sale. But I had these young people who were actually, I considered them my friends, and they told, not they, but it happened that I was completely attacked, like very strongly for having a sale that had anything to do with Occupy Wall Street. Because at that time, I remember, you might remember, there was like businesses, if they actually did anything in their windows to support anything about Wall Street, it was really judged, oh, are they for real? Are they just trying to get money? Are they just trying to use it? Are they just this, you know? And it's like, whoa, you know, it's so touchy to actually get out and say something, you know?
Yeah, it really is.
About how you feel. And if you use your business or even, and your business is who you are, if you're an artist or however, that's how you say something, you know? And so it was, I guess it was a bit of a lesson. It's like, oh, yeah, you can't just, like, get out there and just like, yeah, that's what I think, you know? And you got to be all, like, edit yourself and be real careful and stuff.
You know, yeah. It's a shame, and I mean, I love the, you know, Facebook, and I love everything like that, but the double-edged sword that comes with everything, including love, you know,
That's right.
That, you know, there's this big PC.
And you do it from love. You just open your heart again.
Right, but there's this, exactly, but you do it for, there's this PC, political correctness, which has gone way too far, which is what you're talking about, which is, you know, it's like, don't say what you really want to feel, just be positive. Well, mm-hmm. You know what? Life isn't positive.
Just be positive, yeah. But,
I mean, didn't we learn from Shakespeare, or, you know, that it's like, we're animals. We just happen to be at the top of the food chain. We forget that. But, you know.
Yeah, and discourse, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, I sometimes go off on Facebook sometimes and I see certain friends say, oh, you know, you should never say that. You should never write that. You should never give your political view. And I actually want to break that down. I mean, sometimes I do it intentionally.
I agree. I think it's really fun to kind of like,
kind of
say,
go,
all right, so like, why do we have all these rules anyway? You know, I mean, look, like, you know, what is like, you know, what's going on with this planet? Is it even going to be round? What's happening? Why do we have all these rules telling us not to be the way we feel?
Yeah, like, why can't you say, you know, I really, this and that, and this is, and you know, I had to tone it down on Facebook. And I'm thinking, you know, to hell with it, because I'm not going for corporate sponsorship anyway. I mean, I'm going for who wants to sponsor me. I mean, you know, we all have to have our sponsors, you, everybody out there that
God,
has a business.
You know, and don't you find, like, that you end up sponsoring yourself anyway most
of course.
Of the time? So you may as well just please yourself.
Yeah, but that's where the freedom is. And you know what? It comes with a price. And if you're willing to be tough enough to do it, you know, I mean, we're in the, I mean, you're in the warrior caste, as you would say in India. And, you know, to be a woman and to be in warrior caste, man, you got to be in good health. You got to take care of yourself. And you got to let.
What caste is it called?
Warrior caste.
I mean, the warrior caste.
Yeah, warrior caste. It's a certain thing. And then, yeah, my friend Tamerlane Phillips knows much more about than I do because he is obsessed and he's a Hare Krishna and he knows and he's lived in India for 2 years. But I've known a little bit about Indian culture through him. And it's sometimes the way they describe things is kind of a little bit more efficient than American interpretation or a Western interpretation.
Sure.
But, you know, and I mean, this is what I really liked about one of the chants of the protesters over the bridge. And I wrote this down when I was taking notes before this interview at like 6 a.m. this morning. I loved this. We are unstoppable. Another world is possible.
And, oh, my God, that was so much fun. We are unstoppable. Another world is possible.
You know?
I'm telling you.
And I would have never known that they had even said that if I hadn't read your blog. Like, I didn't see
it. Oh, really? Yeah, you see, nobody talked about it.
No.
And in fact, there was a deliberate shutdown and a deliberate no news decision from
the
powers that be that nobody would talk about it because it wasn't, nobody wanted, well, not nobody, but, you know, it wasn't, wanted to be known that how powerful an event it was, and that's actually how they really kind of quelled or you know the 99% movement, and I visited down at those that square too, and it was just really sweet, you know. It was like what you miss in the world today, which just doesn't really, I mean, you listen to like old soul songs and this is, you know, I was going to put like Al Green in one of my, you know, oh, that's exactly another world.
Yeah.
Gotta
well,
find me a new world, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this is what they did.
You and me.
Exactly.
Together. You know, right? Where people just like, there's, you know, I mean, Facebook, like, that's all our world is about, actually. Not all our world
I mean,
is about,
it's become like a big...
It's in fact a very powerful force in our lives.
Trunk.
And it's not about communication. It's about self-promotion.
Right. But, you know what? I used to communicate greatly. I know, because you're one of the people that never erased me. Because I used to rant, and then everyone said, oh, you can't do that, Olivia. You mustn't do that. This is going to hurt your career. And then I had like this following of people.
You never said anything horrible about me.
No, I love you to death.
You anyway.
Well, I love you to death, and I only say what I believe is wrong in my heart. But you know, sometimes, I mean, I said something controversial regarding Galliano and actually my beloved Peter Davis because I hadn't liked the New York Times. Well,
you
I hadn't like
whatever you said.
Well, whatever it turned out to be this big love fest, and he came on my show as a result of me going.
Oh.
As me going, I don't really perceive. It was a thing that a New York Times writer said. This magazine is for the rich and by the rich, and he came on my show and said, and I actually read his Galliano piece, and I read the entirety
is
of it.
This Peter Davis? I'm sorry, Olivia.
The Peter Davis of Scene Magazine, the legendary, my past guest, the journalist, writer, socialite, extraordinary.
Peter,
the
yeah.
one we love him, our friend. And so,
yes,
and so, you know, he said, someone said, and he never mentioned my name, and that really got to me. I was like, wow, that's really mad respect right there, because I just went on this rant. And I was like, how dare this magazine, right at the Occupy movement, how dare. And I just read the New York Times guy said, and I forgot his name, and I don't really care to remember it, for the rich, by the rich. And, you know, when I read the article and I really spoke to Peter, I go, you know, this isn't the right pitch, and this is actually not true. Because if you read his magazine, it's not by the rich and for the rich. It's for everybody.
You know love makes the world go round, and love, baby, make the seesaws go up and down, and it makes trees grow tall, and the most important thing of all, it makes a boy and girl, oh, say they feel so fine now, without love. Flowers would grow in spring, and without spring, yeah, the birds just couldn't sing. Yeah, yeah, everybody needs love, and to watch the twinkling stars above, it makes a boy and girl, yeah, say they feel so fine now, yeah. Just to watch the twinkling stars above, it makes a boy and girl, oh, say they feel so fine now. Oh, love makes you cry now. That goes for Billy, Sherry, Bobby, and Marcia, and baby, you and I. Oh, I can prove to you that these facts of love are so true. It makes a boy and girl, yeah, say they feel so fine now. Love, love, sweet love. Love is so good, child. Ooh, it's so fine.
So he came on my show and I gave him a fair break, and I thought it was great because it really gave a true depiction of his magazine instead of this hyperbole of you know, of bullshit. And I mean, I can say that.
Yeah.
A hyperbole of bullshit, which is supposed to be by the rich and for the rich. That's not chic anymore. I mean, this world has become, I mean, Rome is burning type of thing. And
rich is really, I mean, I don't mean this, you know, in an idiotic, but it's actually kind of a state of mind, you know, rich.
Yeah, it is.
I have a lot of friends who have very little and who are very rich. You know, they're very, very happy people who have like an amazing life.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, babe, totally. You know, I love what you said, because I've taken a lot of notes on you here, but you love Milos Forman's hair, and, you know, and you draw parallels with, you know, which we're going to talk about, movies and music and...
Even the fashion in hair, yeah, was kind of like, I thought the 70s was a bit of a feeling of, at that moment I thought that, but fashion and opinions about fashion change, like, so often, and that's why it's become like an insane kind of a business to really participate in, especially, I mean, on any level.
Well, you know, you're known as the queen of cool. You're known as like the downtown chick that actually made the downtown style chic. You were the one who put it on the map. You're the one. You're the legend. You're Daryl Kay.
People say that to me all the time, mm-hmm. and you read it, and it kind of just becomes like a moniker, like, I don't feel that I am that.
Yeah, but you know what? No great person ever feels that. That just means that you're even more great. The fact that you just said that. Because, you know, it's like if someone says, oh, you did a great radio show, I'd be like, what? Yeah, it was okay. Whatever.
Jesus. I wish life was just twice as long so you could actually just kind of get a handle on, all right, I finally accept that. Now let me, like, live another life based on enjoying that.
Yeah, because you're a perfectionist, Daryl, and, you know, and perfectionists never... I mean, you could win like 5 Academy Awards, and you talk to some of these directors, and they're like, but I just haven't made the right movie yet. Someone like Stanley Kubrick would have said that. Bless his heart.
Oh, man, and I've been on a total Kubrick spree for the last... I watched the most brilliantly hilarious movie on Netflix the other day called Color Me Kubrick.
Oh! I saw that like years ago, and I need to rewatch
it's
that.
It's really good. It's really funny.
Really? Oh, yeah, he was an anomaly. I mean, he was a genius, you know.
Yeah. Who is it? Who played him? I can't remember who played Stanley Kubrick. He's so hilarious. Anyway, yeah. Whack.
Well, you know,
waxing.
I love this. I love what you say on your website, and I love that you posted Gil Scott's. You know, it's so funny. You and I have a lot in common with this music thing, because you posted Gil Scott, Hair and the Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which is something that
I used to go see him a lot. I loved Gil Scott, Hair and Grandma's Hands. And John Wayne is coming to save us all.
I know. And, you know, I, well, when I'm in a club and I'm DJing in a club and not doing an interview, I always kind of like play that twice in one night. But I love how you say, this is the dawning.
Oh, man, the nipple and the bottle, or?
Oh, I love how you say, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, supposed to be the age of enlightenment. And as Gil Scott-Heron said, the revolution will not be televised, which is kind of where we are now.
And that's exactly what happened on the bridge. It's like, you know, it was great.
Yeah. And you know what? I really
that movement it needs to I love sorry, I keep interrupting you. You were about to say something.
No, it's your stage, babe. You interrupt me.
But I love people power. I think it's amazing when, you know, even John Lennon, so we guess everybody's talk about music, because it all gets said through music. You know, musicians today are the poets of yesterday, and
the musicians of yesterday are the pulse of today, too.
I guess somehow you could say it in a few different ways. I knew that wasn't exactly right the way I said it.
That's okay. I nailed what you were thinking. I'm vibing, Daryl. I'm a viber.
But I can't even. You said something else that just made me think something, and then I lost my thought. What did you just say before that?
I said that. I said something about, you know, Gil Scott-Heron, the age of Aquarius, the age of enlightenment, and the revolution will not be televised.
Oh, right, but the John Lennon thing is about, like, how, you know, you dope you with religion and sex and TV, right? And so it's consumer products, and that's how, like, all the, you know, young ones, I always think of the generation of the 20-somethings is the generation of kids who will make a change. You know, they'll get up and stand up and march and do those things, but they're all so, you know, doped on consumer products, iPods, devices.
I know.
That's what everyone's doing now. And then the fear culture, you know, pumping you with fear. You always gotta be afraid of something. But what about those billboards all over New York City? I can't believe people don't seem to say anything about them, but have you got a plan? You know, what are you going to do in a disaster? And they're just everywhere, you know. And
yeah, they've been doing this fear thing ever since 9/11.
Yeah, and do you remember we used to have like orange level and, you know.
Oh, yeah, amber.
Yellow level.
Yeah, well, the airports frighten me. I mean, you know, if you even look slightly scared, maybe because you're afraid to fly, you know, it's like, they can pull you aside for anything. I don't want to get into that because it's a whole hour conversation.
Yeah.
But
oh yeah, no. But I have a guilty conscience. Like if the cops are coming with the siren, I just always think it's me, even if I do too.
But it's not our fault. It's like this is like the age of paranoia. I really feel like this is like the dark age of paranoia right now, and we have to pull out of it. And we all have to be the warrior caste. All of us have to like band together, you know. You worked with Jim Jarmusch. He's another one. By the way, I want to say that your playlist is amazing because we have to sort of end it in order to get your songs in. And I want to talk to you. I wish the show was still 2 hours, but for, you know, syndication purposes, we, for the moment, an hour. But, you know, you have Love Makes the World Go Round, Jan Jackson. Your taste is amazing, Going Back the Birds.
Because I always feel like running. Not away, because there's no such place. Because if there was, I would have found it by now. because it's easier to run, easier than staying and finding out you're the only one who didn't run. Because running will be the way your life and mine will be described, as in the long run, or as in having given someone a run for his money, or as in running out of time. Because running makes me look like everyone else, though I hope there will never be cause for that. Because I will be running in the other direction, not running for cover. Because if I knew where cover was, I would stay there and never have to run for it. Not running for my life. Because I have to be running for something of more value to be running and not in fear. Because the thing I fear cannot be escaped, eluded, avoided, hidden from, protected from, gotten away from, not without showing the fear as I see it now. Because closer, clearer, closer, nearer, because of you, and because of that nice that you quietly, quickly be causing, and because you're going to see me run soon, and because you're going to know why I'm running then. You'll know then, because I'm not going to tell you now.
You got shout out Walker Brothers, Native New Yorker, Odyssey, Coney Island Baby, of course, Lou Reed. It's all over now, Baby Blue. Now, Van Morrison, I'm telling you, is very hard to get, so I replaced him with Dion, which sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. Hey, I hope you really enjoyed that. That was part one of the Daryl Kerrigan, Daryl K, iconic Irish-born, New York-based fashion designer, icon, possibly filmmaker, part one of the Olivia Maxwell Radio Salon. You can hear part two. Please stay tuned for this very precious, heartfelt interview next Sunday, 8 to 9, on VNDC Radio HD2, WBIG 100.3 FM, and also on www.vndcradio.com, and on my personal website, www.oliviaradiosalon.com. Please don't miss this. Ciao, Vietnam, and good evening, America, and to the world. I love you all. Big kiss. Welcome to part two. Happy Sunday, everybody. You're listening to the Olivia Maxwell Radio Salon. Ciao, Vietnam, and hello, America. Big, big kiss to everybody. You're listening to VNDC Radio, WBIG 100.3 FM, HD2 Radio, and alternatively on the web, www.oliviaradiosalon.com and www.vndcradio.com. With the continuation of Daryl Kerrigan, Daryl K, the iconic Irish-born, New York City-based fashion designer who has carved her way into legendary status as a true original and been in very, very, very many magazines, which I haven't mentioned, but I will in the intro, because there's so much. It's been 20 years, and she closed up her Bond Street store, and she still is making many, many interesting clothes, and the future's wide open for her, just like the desert and the wide open sky. And she's been on 1997 People Magazine Hot Pants. Great, huge write-up on her. She's graced the cover in 98 of Bazaar Magazine. 1999, cover of Spin, article on her. 2000 in W. 2001 GQ. 2002 New York Times Magazine. 2006 Moda. 2008 Nylon. 2010 Vogue.com, featuring Olivia Palermo. 2011 Vogue with heiress Erin Lauder, where she's wearing those famous leather, stretchy, versatile, I say Jim Morrison pants. Very inspired by music she is, and you can see it. And you can see all the rock and roll in her music. Without any further ado, darlings, here is my part two of Daryl Kerrigan.
I'm a bounder. I married a Yankee girl. But I went back to visit old Japan, where there she was, Cho-Cho San.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Van was in there because he represents, and the music actually represented kind of periods of my life and moods, you know, that the musicians and each artist will represent a very particular feeling, you know, and of course Van's like the, you know, the bleeding Irish heart of soul.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, Forge Your Own Change, this lovely dirge from this psychedelic 68-74 Dr. Hooker. What a great song. I never heard that song until you introduced me. Thank you. Thank you, Daryl, because I never heard that song. And this is why I love what I do, because every time someone comes on of quality, like you, royalty, I mean, you are. And then, you know, of course, I knew the Waylon Jennings, you know, Lonesome Ornery in Maine, I mean, and then Double Dutch, Malcolm McLaren, love him, because, you know, Alan McGee was on, and Alan McGee, you know, with Creation Records and founded Oasis, all these great bands, Primal Scream, was his best friend, and we had lovely talks about Malcolm McLaren. He's, you know, gone.
Malcolm McLaren, an absolute, like, visionary, you know, and probably, you know, more, I don't know, a generous soul. I was, you know, he was a generous person, because he wanted the people who he kind of collaborated with to be successful. His goal was to make people successful.
She, and Little She, where are you from?
East New York, Brooklyn.
You're from East New York, Brooklyn. And what do you love about the world's famous Supreme Team Show?
All that scratching is making me itch.
All that scratching is making you itch? Well, Little She is making me itch, too, I guarantee it.
I love it, though.
Here's just a lot of superstar. He has something that he wants to most definitely tell you.
Little She.
Yeah.
How long have you been listening to the world's famous?
About 6 weeks.
6 weeks? Do you catch the 4 o'clock show as well?
You know that. All the shows, they come on late at night.
How do you manage to stay at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Because the coincidence is all right.
Jump through the roof. They might break and
Yeah, he was beautiful. What he did on that boat with the Sex Pistols and then they all got arrested was just legend.
I know. Well, that's why I chose Malcolm, too, because, of course, he's associated with, you know, Sex Pistols and Vivian and, you know, and London and New York and early hip-hop and, like, just realizing how incredible those girls with their double dutch, the skipping and the energy and the... like, that's fantastic to be able to acknowledge that. It was really good.
Well, Daryl,
go on. A tune, right? Is that what you're going to do?
Right. Well, you know, I just want to say that you're an incredible, unique soul through and through, and you're a warrior cast. And I want to just say that. I haven't said that to any... You know, I've called people... You know, everyone on my show has been phenomenal because I wouldn't have it any other way. But I really want to thank you for coming on because it's just such an honor to have you on. I mean, I'm so honored.
It's fun to chat with a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
I think we'd be in the same army, you know.
Oh, definitely. And by the way, to talk about armies.
I watched Spartacus. That was the other Kubrick movie I just watched, Spartacus.
Isn't that lovely?
Talk about warriors. I mean, yeah, Kirk Douglas. Like, what age is he in that movie? He must be... You know, he must be like late 40s, right? And whereas nowadays, everyone's 20-something.
Now, you closed up your shop. You're not actively going to do the fashion right now. So what is next for you?
Oh, that's not true.
Tell us the truth. We want to hear it right now.
I will never give up fashion. I can't give up fashion.
Wonderful.
I mean... I don't have that my shop anymore, and that with the period of time to have had that shop just had to end. You know, it wasn't the right thing for me anymore because what in a nutshell, I wasn't happy. I wasn't enjoying it. My life was becoming an albatross, as somebody called it. You know, not necessarily a ball and chain, but a bit more. You know.
You need a good road trip, Daryl.
That would be great. I have kids, though, so I can't, like, desert them yet. Soon.
Yeah. Well, you can take them.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, there's always, the West, the Joshua Tree, the Grand Canyon, you know, go on.
Man, I love road trips, yeah.
I did them through my 20s. Go on.
Now, I do think for a road trip, what you really need is a perfectly old, like a big old 70s car, like a big old cruiser. So that's, if I went on a road trip, I would have to like buy like a big old caddy with those, you know, walls in between the back and the front window.
You know, you need what you're talking about is a muscle car.
Bench seat, no, big, more of a cruiser, you know, and changes to give it a, rebuild the whole engine.
That's so you, Daryl. You could, like, paint your name on the side of the car and just, like, sell clothing.
That would be great.
You could sell clothing out of the trunk.
Make a movie.
Hey, I'll go with you because I've done every single interstate. That's all I did in my 20s was road trips. They're like, what did you do? I was like, well, I learned how to play the guitar, play music, and I did it alone. I mean, it was nuts, but
it was a passion. Like, it could be like an old... I guess, yeah, like a good old 60s kind of thing again.
Yeah.
Get on the road. Yeah.
Well, I know that you're interested in film, so maybe we should do the Olivia Daryl road trip and I'll DJ the whole way through with you.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. You know, you could have a convoy.
Oh, yeah. And then you got to do the spray paint T-shirts out of the back. It'll be a huge hit. And then at the same time, do the Occupy thing through the country and the anti-fracking thing. Hopefully
becoming a bit of a production, and the kids as well.
Yeah, I know, no, right. And then we might get arrested.
But I love the dream. It's a fantastic
And then
idea.
We might get arrested at some point for, like, doing it, like, you know, not having permission on public ground or any of that crap. Poor Josh Fox. Isn't he a hero with Gasland?
Josh Fox, yeah, and he really never knew where it would all go once he made that movie. I don't think he had any idea where it would take him. He just did it out of a real kind of stab at trying to just save his where he grew up. It's really a very shocking thing. I have a petition actually up on signon.org called Close the Halliburton Loophole that I started in. But I don't have that many. I've got like 870 signers or something, and it's not nearly enough to really do anything with it. But But, you know, the whole hydrofracking, I guess, we don't want to, like, describe everything, how that's done, whatever, right?
I mean, it's
awful. 350 chemicals, you know, pumped into the ground, blast open the shale, breaks.
It's murder. It's killing people. It's
the water,
murder.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. All the chemicals, mm-hmm. you know, pollute the water. The gases come out. They come through the pipes into our water systems. You know, become liquefied, poison people, poison animals, all of this. And it actually is, we've seen it growing and becoming something that was, we've been afraid of for like 4 or 5 years now because of where we are. I have a house on the Delaware River and, you know, way up north. And, so,
you
and now it actually
that.
Looks like it's bloody well, excuse me, but it looks like it's, actually could even happen, whereas a lot of times I think, no way, you know, people will not let this happen, but it's amazing. They've got a lot of power, these guys.
I know, they do, and
people have got to do something. People have got to, like, get off their damn devices. Like that movie Network.
Oh, my God, honey.
I'm not going to take it anymore!
I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. Everyone get out your windows and shout it out. That's what they should do on Facebook when a big movie.
You know what? You know, you and I have a lot in common that I never knew until you came on this show. You talked about Once Upon a Time in the West. You're naming my top 10 movies. Paris, Texas is one of them. You know, Network is one of
Harry
them.
Harry Dean Stanton. I worked with Harry Dean on a movie.
Oh, you did? That's right, because you used to do the wardrobe and you used to work with Jim Jarmusch as well.
Yeah. It wasn't a Jim Jarmusch movie that Harry Dean was on. Was Harry Dean ever in a Jim Jarmusch movie? I'm not sure.
No, I don't think he was. It was a Sam Shepard sort of...
I worked on this movie called Cold Feet, and Harry Dean Stanton was in it. The guy who's married to Susan Sarandon, can't remember his name, Tim something, Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins. Oh,
Glover was in it, like, great cast.
Right. Well, I'm thinking of doing a two-part interview with you, meaning I would like to speak for the full hour and run through the 60 minutes and then do the songs for the second hour and maybe throw in some of my own because I'm going to do that. So I'm going to stop at 60 minutes and I'm going to let you speak because there's just too much with you and you're too special a soul. I'm not going to cut you off. I'm going to have next week I won't have but the part two on of the interview, which is going to be the music segment because it's just too. You're too valuable.
Like crack decision there.
You're too valuable, you know, Daryl. And
thanks. You're real sweet.
Well, I'm not sweet. I'm just real. I'm just trying. You know, I just kind of the genuineness comes out with people like you. You know, it's like the shiners. It's like if you shine, I shine. And it's like. We need to promote more of that in the world. It's like you're a shiner, so you're going to bring out the shine in me, and shiners bring that out. I just came up with this, but maybe because I was thinking of The Shining, but, you know, that little kid, you know, he had The Shining. I mean,
one of my brothers, my mom died there 2 years ago, actually, only yesterday or the day before. It was yesterday, I think, was the anniversary of her death, yesterday. And but I became very close to one of my brothers through the last few weeks, and it was a very cool thing. So I lost my mother, but I gained a brother. Oh. And but he said to me, like, he's like, Daryl, you got to speak out more, you know, you got to speak your mind more. And like, it kind of made me think, like, yeah, you're right, I do need to speak my mind more, because I have actually been quite kind of had not spoken my mind a lot in my younger years, and it's a good thing to decide to do.
It's necessary, because in the world we're living in today, it's necessary, because there's two sides now. There's like the Halliburton, the fracking, the polluters, the ones that are just filling their pockets up, the 1%, which is damn powerful. And then there's the 99% of us that have to do the little jobs and waitress and whatever until we make it or whatever that means. You have made it. I'm trying, to get the word out by doing that. And one thing I wanted to ask you, and I always... I haven't had a lot of women on my show. I've had mostly men. I've had Audrey Turner on, who was Ike Turner's widow, who is amazing, and I've had Bebe Buell on. But what would you say, because I feel very much like you do, I'm fearless and I want to help better the world. What would you say to us women? What is it that makes you strong? Like, what is the thing, what can you tell us? What can you tell our public? Ciao, Vietnam, and hello, America. Just a little brief station identification.
You remind me, as soon as we started talking on the phone today, which I've never really spoken to with you on the phone, you reminded me of a very dear friend I've had for about 25 years, a very long friendship with a woman who's actually a psychiatrist, and she sounds like you, she's got a personality.
very enthusiastic and brilliantly intelligent, will, you know, knows about everything. Mm. And she was telling me recently about, you know, she's a very, a big supporter of women too, and women, you know, getting together with other women. A kind of a women power thing, and there's a lot of that around these days. And, you know, it shouldn't be taken in a way that it's anything about ganging up on men or being negative towards, nothing like that.
Nothing at all, exactly.
Nothing like that.
No.
It's absolutely about the power of women and the intuitiveness of women, which is a completely different intuition than that men have. I mean, we are a completely unique, that women are from Mars, men are, I never read that book, but, you know.
You don't really have to. It's in your gut.
Exactly. You don't have to. Life's mm-hmm. too short. You know that. You know it. Yeah, it's like, all right, mm-hmm. yeah, downloaded that. But she says, like, that women, by helping each other, by, you know, by actually just being together, and helping each other releases endorphins in each of us.
Oh, fascinating.
Know? And it's such a great thing to understand that, you know, because everything about, it's actually just about being connected to the earth again. Like, mm-hmm. it's
Mother Nature.
Isn't just what you see outside and the trees and, you know, I mean, it's all connected and energies and, you know, love makes the world go round.
And you know that.
It actually does make the world go round. And
yes.
Yeah, it takes a little song like from Dion Jackson to sing it. But, you know, if, like, you can go and study, you know, meditation or Buddha and or Jesus and, like, every, like, deep thinking, like, you know, enlightenment is about that.
So, absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, your fall show that I was at, I will never forget. It will stay in my mind forever because of the music you chose. And you had, like you say, your background, you had leaves on the floor, burnt leaves in different colors, branches. The models had to walk over branches.
Branches.
You know?
And then, actually, I do have to, because immediately my mind, which it shouldn't go to, but the fact that a lot of other people, not, I did see that idea, of course, come a little later again, which is, you know, kind of like, but yes, brought all the branches in from the country, wanted to, I mean, I had a vision for that show, which was massive, nothing like what I ended up with. I wanted to have, like, holographic trees projected on the runway.
Well, you did, on the wall. You had this round thing that was very reminiscent, I thought, of the Andy Warhol early Velvet Underground, when they were still the Plastic Inevitable band, which they had in the background, like, just on the tail end when Nico joined. You know what I'm saying? Even before
that's
Nico.
Right.
And that you
yeah,
had some
I,
of that channeled.
I mean, yeah. So there was a movie, yeah. So like, everything to do with a show like that you were at. So the music was the Doors music, and I guess it probably, it went, But I don't think Jim actually ever even sings in it, does it? It's just the Doors, and then it goes into 5 years.
That's right, it was a musical thing.
Says it's time to close now. I guess I better go now. I really like to stay here all night. The cars crawl past all stuff. Share them all.
And then actually I think it goes into either some Chopin or Satie because of the piano, the beautiful piano comes back later and we bring in other piano.
Do you have a recording of that show? Because it was so compelling that I'd actually like to actually get that.
Sure. I definitely do.
Because if we're doing a two-parter, then I can come in next week and I can do your 10 songs. And then we can run that entire reel.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do that kind of mixing, like in my early shows in the early 90s, I mixed like, you know, Glenn Campbell in with them.
Love Wichita Lineman. Oh.
In some kind of like a house music, kind of a, like a 4 a.m. kind of a, you know, a vibe with a Glenn Campbell thing. Because. And I was always after the idea of, you know, when you're driving over the bridge in the car and you hear other people's sounds coming in.
You're
in this kind of dreamy mood, you know, and the feelings that evokes, you know, of this multi. And it was at the time later then, like, you know, people had iPods, I mean, whatever, 6-7 years later. And even putting iPods on shuffle then, where you would listen to maybe an ambient kind of like house tune or something, and then it could go into Glenn Campbell. And, you know, I remember having friends like from Ireland be like, oh God, no, I couldn't handle that. I couldn't handle like that shuffle to have such completely different types of music playing after one another. And now that's exactly how we all live, you know.
Yeah, I want to really quickly tell you a story because you actually psychically channeled in to one of the most bone-chillingly orgasmic, I don't know, in the most ethereal way. You just channeled into a moment that I had in my life that is of maybe 12 years ago. You just said Glenn Campbell and what you just said. I was on a cross-country road trip. And maybe I'll end the interview maybe on this note, and then I'll ask you about your film, and then we'll finish. But since we are doing a two-parter with you, because it's just too wonderful, I can't do just an hour. So my old format was 2 hours, so that's what we're going to do. So I was driving with my dear friend Tressa, who lived in Malibu, an amazing, she was also a designer, and, we were driving from L.A., and I remember I was going to meet Alex Mortimer, my boyfriend at the time, in Colorado. And she was asleep, and I'm like this road tripper, and this was like, you know, maybe 13, 14 years ago. And she was asleep, and I remember it was, I guess, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it was the 40 we were on. And it was going through Utah, okay? And we got on the radio for about 4 or 5 hours, nothing but that. And I had driven through the, yeah, exactly. And she had fallen asleep. And I was just alone. And then the sun starts to come up and I'm in pitch dark. I don't know where the heck I am. I'm near, you know, I don't know if I'm near, I don't know, Green River, I forgot the name of it, Utah, right on the Colorado-Utah border. The sun starts coming up. And I wrote a song about this called Mesa's Rising, which I'm releasing on my first record next month.
Perfect.
Called Paso Robles with Eric Campbell. And the songs I did with Frank. So, you know, so all of a sudden, a couple of semis start showing up. The sun starts to rise. And Daryl, I look around me, and I'm on planet Earth. And nothing but coral, pink, orange, red mesas for as far as my eye could see. No truck stop, no light, no city, no building. Nothing. Rien.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
And it was this sacred moment, and then and then all of a sudden comes on, I heard the lineman from the county.
Oh, man, yeah. That's one of
nothing.
My friend's wedding song, Wichita Lineman. Beautiful.
And
yeah.
I got the chills. They just went all over me, and I just felt, I just thought to myself, and I know this sounds corny, in a spiritual way, I just thought to myself, God, it's just like a moment in your life where it clicks and you're like, oh, and it's just, you know, and it's just, you're not working, you're not this, you're not that, and it just happened.
It's a perfect moment. It's like a perfect moment, and it's crystallized. You remember it forever.
Ever.
You know, a moment when all of your senses are alive and aware of everything that's happening at that moment, and the music kicks in.
And you know, thank you so much for being
here.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for being an orb that brought that story out of me, because sometimes I think I shouldn't say anything, and you're the guest, but sometimes
this is actually is the opening scene to a movie that I have been told by friends that I should be writing for 25 years now. This movie has been in the works, and someday I will make this movie. All my friends know about it, but the opening scene is actually of two people driving through Ireland, through like some gorgeous valley surrounded by high mountains, like on the way from Connemara through, becoming into the Midlands. And in Ireland, the weather is wild. Like you'll be there'll be big, fat, white clouds and, the sun just kind of like, really flowing through. It's so bright and so green, and it might have just stopped raining, so the air is really kind of crystallized too with the light. And then a few seconds later, it starts hailstoning. Just huge hailstones are like pounding on the window, and then like on the radio, a couple of minutes. Credence.
Oh.
Have you ever seen the rain?
Oh, yes.
On the radio too, Ireland. If you go back to Ireland, they're still playing the same songs now on the radio that they played back in.
And God bless them. That's what I noticed when I was there with Frank Murray in 2009 and 7 and 8, and driving to Kinvara and our trip to Kinvara. And my gosh, the beauty of that.
Like, they probably still play, like, Vicky Leandros, who won the Eurovision in maybe
And, like, Ronnie and Drew with Easy and Slow, and that was a song that my dad turned me on to when I was there in the 80s, and I saw that. He took me to a Hot House Flowers show, and, gosh, and Galway.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was there in Ackle, and then I was there again as a teenager, and I just always... When I went to Ireland, I was happy to leave England, and when I got to Ireland, I always had sort of anxiety, and when I got to Ireland, it was just gone. And we stayed at an inn at County Clare, and I guess I was like 13, 12, and it was near Loch Derg, and I remember going to this black lake, never seeing anything like this in my life in America.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, Daddy, did I see a fairy? And he was like, yes, you did. You did, Olivia. You did see a fairy.
Was Loch Derg the Black Lake?
Yes, near County Clare, Loch Derg.
I've been on Loch Derg. I used to go out on a boat on Loch Derg a lot, and it is a black lake. You're right. It's a huge lake.
Oh, it's just marvelous. So you're going into film now, Daryl. Are you? Or is that a rumor?
I have a lot of things I would like to accomplish, and one of them would be to make this movie, which is a personal experience that is a wild, wild story that kind of takes America and Ireland and all of these things in, at the same time. And, I've attempted it a few times and it hasn't gone right. In fact, it got all the way to an offer of funding but the way it went with a person who wanted to do it was not willing to allow me to have enough of a creative part in it, and there was many details that are, because it's a real story that happened, and there's the most like wild details that happened that just cannot be edited out, because they're the things that people will say, and oh my God, what about like when this happened, and so I'll never do it unless it can be done properly. Like, I would never do it just to get money to just do it, because it would break my heart, because that's not really what I'm like, but it would just be so
unsatisfying.
It would be like a cancer if this movie came out and it told the story all wrong,
I guess the word would be, it would be negligent.
Negligent, yeah. It feels close.
Let me tell you, no shame in having the long hour movies. I know very well from my father, Ron Maxwell, who I don't ever discuss, who's filming a movie now in Halifax called Copperhead, who was told when he made Gods and Generals, it was originally like 8 hours long.
Wow.
And he had to like cut it down to 6. And, you know, he took out some stuff, which I thought was the best part, you know.
Really?
So, yeah, but the cool thing is last summer the director's cut came out. So, of course, my little scene came back in, and Cooper Huckabee came back in, and John Wilkes Booth came back in, played by the great Chris Connor. And it's just like all these scenes came back into the film, and everyone's like, ah, this.
What's it called?
Gods and Generals. Which really got some negative reviews at first. And I'm like, the reason why is because it should have been 8 hours. And the great stuff, you know, it was like, no, no, Ron, you have to cut it down. And my father, his, you know, Gettysburg is like, you know, goes on and on. So, you know, and he still, you know, prevails. And he, man, he got slammed by the critics. Never listen to anybody but your own voice as an artist. And just don't do it. Because it's a cop out.
Your dad says that.
My dad's like a warrior of, you know, my way, quite frankly, or the highway. And if they had listened to him, he would have gotten way better reviews. Yes, it's a long film. So what? They could have done it in like a two-part thing or a miniseries. Or they could have had it for the people that wanted to sit through like intermissions.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this? We would go to operas and see Aida at Lincoln Center. And they'd have,
well,
like, 12 intermissions.
Because,
no one had a problem with Aida.
Sorry,
yeah. No, go on.
Well, things aren't done nowadays with the desire to just create something with its purpose in mind, with you know, with thinking of the thing itself, that this has to be kept intact all the way. Like, you know, that just becomes like, you know, like, kind of like a, you know, you just like a rocket, whatever, you just drop off that bit and you just go with the small bit at the top that's just going to try and get you the money, you know, and it's never about these days. But actually, when you talk about how, like, your dad, if they had done it the other way, like, what happens nowadays is that, you know, in terms of everybody wanting to just really make the biggest buck, the fastest, biggest buck, though, has also created, like, an anti-reaction to that, where people do want to know about smaller things, and there's a lot of more kind of splintered groups now interested in smaller things, and those things are becoming valued, you know. So actually what's secret and what people never really know about is what they're always trying. I mean, I guess I kind of like being called like an emerging designer for my whole career.
You're a sweetheart. You really are a sweetheart. I'm an emerging radio show.
It's kind of cool being an emerging designer forever, because at least then you never, like, you know, you're never going to get to that point where, like, oh, yeah, okay, we're done with her, you know, because, you know.
But, darling, you know you're kind of a legend. I mean, don't want to knock on the door and remind you, but you think of yourself as emerging, which is actually wonderful because you're going to keep creating, but you're on the map, babe. When I told people you were coming on the show, they were so excited, and I was so excited. So, I mean, I'm somebody who's emerging. I mean, hopefully emerging, but, you know.
it's great to talk instead of just, when you're a fashion designer, you have to, you know, like, if you're somebody like the person, you know, who has been talking, i.e. me, for the last hour, like, who's into maybe, you know, who's into, you know, like, activism and rock music and this and that and movies and everything. But when you're actually, you have to, like, kind of narrow all of that down into one channel, which is fashion.
You must leave, take what you need, you think will last. But whatever you wish to keep, you better grab it fast. Yonder stands your orphan with his gun, crying like a fire in the sun. And it's all over now, babe. streets. Is drawing crazy patterns on your sheet. The sky too is falling under you, and it's all over now, baby blue.
I guess it becomes quite a concentrated feeling, and that is what it is, in fact, in the end, is it's a concentrated feeling, because so much about, like, clothes or how you feel in them, the feeling that you have while you're wearing them, or the feeling that somebody is inspired in somebody else when they see you wearing them, you know, like, I mean, and that's kind of what a woman of style is, will inspire a feeling, you know, that she feels something, and that's who she is. You know, that's how she, you know, operates in her surroundings.
Well, wonderful.
So, but it is a lot to put all of those things into fashion, and so it would be fun sometimes to do a lot more. That's why I love to create the music for the shows. Like, so I mix all the music myself, and, you know, and do the stage sets, and, you know, I do all my own. A lot of other designers hire many, many people to do all of the facets of their business, and I never did, actually. I did everything from styling and shoe design and everything, just because my vision is quite singular, you know. It's just how I want it, but I guess nowadays the reason actually I close the stores, because it's like, all right, well, now what has become my vocabulary of what I say about clothes and how I feel, this is a wardrobe, this is a collection of clothing for a woman who is a certain kind of woman, who's grown up in a certain time and has been exposed to a lot of very cool things, actually, because the women who wear my clothes are some of the most fantastic women who in turn re-inspire me because of who they are. And I feel that, like, our generation, my generation too, we're actually really quite a special generation of people. Are we Generation X? I don't think you are, Olivia. You're younger than I am.
You know what? I am Generation X because I am, I was born in the early 70s.
Oh, right. Well, I'm 60s. So
yeah, 65 to 74 is Generation X, or 67.
Okay.
So we're kindred. That's it. We're Generation X. Which is the last generation, which is like, we don't know flannel shirts grunge, but thank God you got rid of that with your chicness.
Well, I like a bit of grunge, but you know, I always find it like if I wear a plaid shirt, which is kind of your ultimate grunge piece of clothing, I'll never be content to just wear it like hanging out.
No, you got to make it look sexy.
I'll always have to tailor it or tweak it.
It's got to be sexy and hot.
It's got to be sexy,
and
it's
East Village chic.
Yeah,
rock and roll. Well, and I'm looking forward to wearing your clothes. I need to get those leather pants, and I know they're $9.95 or whatever, but I need to get my hands on those leather pants. Hopefully,
well, Livia, you are a woman who shouldn't not have even had the last year or two go by without having had them in your closet. Because life, for a woman, I mean, for any woman, any man, life's too valuable. Your time is too valuable. And the genius of those leather leggings, which I am actually still wearing today, and whenever the weather allows you to wear them, you just pull those things on you because nothing looks as good as them.
You know,
nothing.
Jim Morrison would marry you. I mean, he was known. I mean, he pissed in them, vomited in them. He wore them. He never took those leather pants off.
Oh, well, mine are washable, though. Mine, even though they're leather, they're stretch leather, you wash them in the washing machine. And I'm all about practical because I'm Irish, too, you know. So.
Oh, yes, you are. And I do have this weird karma with y'all. I mean, I do. I just always have. And, you know, working with Jer Kiley recording at Westland Studio, and Jerry O'Connor on strings, and I had Van Morrison's keyboard player, and you know, God bless Frank Murray and my time with him in Ireland, and the altruism of Frank, and this is incredible. And I also love my New York recordings as well, with Jack Smead and Roscoe and Keith Christopher, and those men are also brilliant. But so I look forward to all of it, and I will take you up on your little modeling thing there.
I just
there.
Came out in white, you know, too, those pants, by the way.
Oh, in white? Oh, genius.
White stretch leather leggings, which is kind of the new evolution of rock star.
Amazing. Well, I think we had that little deal where you're going to send me some clothing and I was going to take some photos, send them to
you. Uh-huh, definitely. We should do that.
That's cool.
When are you coming to New York?
I don't know, but I will let you know. Now that I have this show going into next week, I was thinking of coming into New York the second week in June, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, maybe I'll see you then.
That would be lovely.
Okay.
And I just want to say we are going to close Chat Vietnam. You've been listening to the Livia Maxwell Radio Salon on VNDC Radio, Vietnam, Washington, D.C., also on my own channel, www.oliviaradiosalon.com on the World Wide Web. And Daryl, your closing statements, please. My royalty one.
A clothing statement?
Your closing statement.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess there it is.
Which is like your clothing statement.
Clothing statement.
Your clothing statement, your clothing statement, anything you want to say.
And I don't have a lisp.
No.
Perfect.
Adorable. So, that's your closing statement.
That's my closing statement. I really enjoyed talking to you. It was a blast.
You too, darling.
Yes, we'll have to do it again.
You're one of my favorites. I love you to death, you know.
Yes, we are kindred spirits.
Absolutely.
Okay. Women, rock on, women, all right?
Rock on, women, and fight the power. Gil Scott, fight the power is, fight the power, fight the power, right?
Yeah. You know what I was listening to a lot lately, too, is like Lynn Collins. She's great.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
She's a good female. Female icon, kind of rock icon. I think you're saying that you don't have a lot of women on your program. We've got to think of some amazing women. I know an incredible woman that you would love. In fact, her name is Elizabeth Wurtzel.
Really?
Yeah, and she wrote a book called Prozac Nation.
Oh, we must have her on.
You know her, right, don't you? And she's also like a lawyer. Very cool woman, very interesting.
I'd love to hear her song list as well. I just find all that so fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, ciao, Daryl. It's been
bye,
so
Olivia.
A pleasure.
It was fun, and we'll speak soon. Okay.
This has been dynamic, and thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
On a Greyhound bus, but I'm traveling this morning. I'm going to Shreveport and down to New Orleans. Been traveling these highways, been doing things my way. It's been making me lonesome. Jet black, and her name was Codeine. Thought she was the cream of the Basin Street Queens. She got tired of that smoky wine dream, began to feel lonesome. In our sweeps, gave on to a beggar who was mumbling through the streets. Had no escaping from his snowy white dream. All that lonesome on so low. At dawn I pray to the Lord of my soul. I say, dear Lord, do right by me. You know I'm tired of being lonesome.